Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, May 11th, 2023. City of Marfa hires company to track short-term rental data. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Marfa City Council recently voted to approve the hiring of a Colorado-based company called AirDNA that tracks data relating to area short-term rentals, STRs. Despite recent efforts by the Marfa Chamber of Commerce and some citizens to encourage the city to more aggressively regulate STRs, the move to hire AirDNA is more centered around effective advertising, said City Manager Mandy Roan, than regulation. We do have to spend money on advertising every year. This will really help other companies that do the marketing for us see when people are coming in, how long they're staying, and where they're coming from, said Roan. As Roan explained in the April Council meeting, AirDNA, which is AIRDNA, will help the city's tourism department, now headed up by new director Jennifer Connors, better grasp existing visitor patterns over time and, in turn, target advertising to ensure those dollars are being spent effectively. Still, through the platform, the city will have access to local Airbnb and VRBO occupancy rates and revenue information for individual properties, thanks to an add-on feature called Property Performance Data the city chose to pay for, which will help city employees double-check that STR operators' self-reported taxes are accurate. We'll double-check against paperwork when people turn it in, said Roan in a follow-up call with the Big Bend Sentinel. We can make sure if people tell us that they're not renting, it would show us if they were, but that's not the primary use of AirDNA. AirDNA will work in tandem with existing companies the tourism department contracts, Theory Practice for marketing, and Zartico for personal data collection, to maximize marketing efforts, said Roan. By figuring out low and high visitation rates, as well as where visitors are coming from and why, for art, nature, the city can place ads in the right places at the right times that appeal to specific demographics. AirDNA gets who is staying and where, Zartico gets what they're doing while they're here, and Theory Practice takes all that information and makes sure we're sending ads to the right people at the right place, said Roan. While the AirDNA data will be accessible for city employees only, there is limited data available for general free account users on local STRs. The platform shows that the area's top property manager, TransPecos Realty Management, has a total of 35 listings, that there are a total of 200 active listings in the area, the fact that 90% of listings are private homes, and that the average rental size is around 2 bedrooms for 4 guests. Zartico, which the city first hired last year, utilizes personal location data collected from mobile devices, through the Apple Weather app, for example, to show municipalities very specific information about individual visitors via a dashboard. It will say people in this income bracket are spending this much money on average, this many people are coming with kids, Roan said during the recent city council meeting, listing out the data points. That's scary, replied Councilmember Irma Salgado, which was met with laughs from other council members and council meeting attendees. It's a bit big brotherish, agreed Roan, but it does really help us know what to do. All of the services, which cost a total of $40,200, are paid for with hotel occupancy tax revenue. By law, the city is required to use HOT revenue to promote more tourism, and out of the roughly $700,000 it's projected to receive this year in HOT taxes, around $100,000 will be used for advertising. Ron also argued that more data would also be useful for new tourism director Jennifer Connors as she gets up and running in the role, allowing her to better understand trends and formulate accurate visitor numbers. As it stands, the city's tourism department is unable to provide a number of visitors that attended last weekend's Marfa Invitational, for example, but may be better equipped to do so with air DNA data. We know people are staying, but it's really hard to pin down how many people are here, said Roan. It won't be perfect because some people will be in hotels, some people are staying with friends, some people are in Alpine, but it will give us a better idea of how many people are actually coming out, because that's something we don't have right now. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. Newly re-elected council member Raul Lara campaigns across the street from Marfa City Hall during the May 6th general election last weekend. Here are the general election results for Presidio County. By Sam Karras, Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. By Mary Cantrell, Mary at BigBenSentinel.com. Presidio County. On May 6th, Presidio County residents turned out to vote in local races that included a proposition determining the future of the local entity overseeing and managing groundwater conditions, city council members, and school district board members. Here are the results. Presidio County. Proposition 1. Regarding whether or not to allow the Presidio County Underground Water Conservation District, PCUWCD, to become a taxing entity passed handily, with 668 votes cast in favor and 101 against. PCUWCD General Manager Trey Gerfers said the district's hard work campaigning had paid off. I think we really gave it the best shot that we could, and the results speak for themselves, said Gerfers. Gerfers attributed the landslide to the district's efforts to get information to voters in a variety of ways, through videos, bilingual informational sheets, letters to the editor, social media, and word of mouth. Gerfers canvassed heavily, greeting locals outside of the post office to promote the election, and holding public forums in Marfa and Presidio. Since its inception in 1999, the PCUWCD has operated from a budget from the county commissioners, but will now levy its own tax in order to be compliant with state law. The district has entered into a tax swap agreement with the county, which will see no increase in taxes from the public. And Gerfers will now work with the county tax assessor collector in order to determine what tax rate to set in order to fund the district's modest $50,000 annual budget. It remains unclear whether the district will levy the tax as early as this coming fiscal year, which begins in October, or the following year. Gerfers said he contacted the district's many grant funders, all of which were relieved to hear the groundwater district wouldn't be abolished. It's a loose end that should have been tied when the entity was formed, said Gerfers, and he and the district board were ready to get back to normal operations post-election. This has now been passed. This should have been passed 30 years ago, but this unfinished bit of business is now finished, said Gerfers. I'm really excited to move beyond electoral politics, back to what I'm supposed to be doing, which is groundwater. City of Marfa. Incumbent Manny Baeza won the mayoral race with 261 votes to opponent Stephen Salgado Bolter's 100. This will be Baeza's third term as the mayor of Marfa. "Thank you so much for your continued support," said Baeza of the election results, addressing the Marfa community. "I'm looking forward to serving the community to see that our plans and goals come to fruition." Salgado Bolter had withdrawn from the race on April 19th, too late to have his name taken off the ballot, per state law. Had he won, he would have had to decline the office, leaving city council to fill the vacancy. For a city council, voters were asked to cast their ballots for two out of three candidates, incumbent Raul Lara, Travis Ackerman, and Krista Marquez, for two available seats previously occupied by Lara and by Irma Salgado, who chose not to run for re-election after serving on council for 6 years. For those seats, Raul Lara has won re-election with 293 votes, while Travis Ackerman has won election with 158 votes. Krista Marquez garnered 102 votes. Lara and Ackerman will serve full two-year terms. "I'm just blessed. I'm humbled. I am grateful for my community. I will keep working for my constituents," said Lara, who will now enter his third term on city council. "I'm just over the moon." "Thank you to all of the voters and candidates for participating in this election," said Ackerman. "I am honored by my fellow Marfans' trust and support, and I look forward to serving the community." Mark Morrison ran unopposed for a third available seat, previously occupied by resigned Councilmember Jason Ballman, and was declared elected for a one-year term. That seat will be open for election next year for a full two-year term. Marfa City Council canvassed the election results at a meeting on Tuesday night, making results official, and new council members Ackerman and Morrison will officially join council for their next regular meeting on May 25th. City of Presidio. Incumbent John Ferguson won re-election with 311 votes to challenger Angel Campos's 59 votes. This election marks Ferguson's 10th consecutive year as mayor, in addition to serving as mayor from 1991 to 1994. Ferguson was honored to continue to serve his community in the coming years. Earlier this year, he announced in September via social media his plan not to run for re-election, but changed his tune in March after personal reflection and the advice of his wife, Lucy. "I'm very happy the community wants to keep me on board for a couple more years," he said. "I always want input from everyone to make sure we're doing the best we can." He was also excited to continue to bolster the friendship between Presidio and its sister city, Ojinaga. The two towns are home to many dual citizens, have conjoined fire departments, and are constantly working together to grow the local economy. Just this week, Ferguson, alongside Ojinaga Mayor Andres Ramos, met with the governor of Chihuahua, Mauro Campos, in her first visit to the area. "She spoke to me and referenced the great relationship between Presidio and Ojinaga," he said. "It was very nice to have her say that because it is real." Incumbents Arian Velasquez Ornelas and Nancy Arevalo kept their seats with 235 and 268 votes, respectively. Both women are heavily involved in city governance. Velasquez Ornelas also serves on the city's Convention and Visitors Bureau, and Arevalo was just tapped as president of the Presidio Municipal Development District. Challenger Todd Beckett won 109 votes in total. Presidio ISD School Board Trustees. Brenda Whitty, Jaime Sanchez, Marco Lujan, and Perla Natividad were selected by voters to fill seats on the Presidio ISD school board. Witte earned 232 votes, Sanchez earned 229 votes, Lujan won 235 votes, and Natividad won 337 votes. Contenders Steve Nicky Alvarez and Carlos Reyna garnered 141 votes, Jeremy Velasquez won 188, and Jessica Acevedo Nunez won 79. The four empty seats this cycle replace board members serving as president, vice president, treasurer, and secretary. On Thursday, the board will hold an election to decide who will fill those leadership positions. This year, voters got to choose from a particularly crowded field. New board member Perla Natividad was thrilled to see so much engagement from the community. Having so many candidates, it's exciting, to be honest, she said, especially so many well-qualified ones. With fentanyl closer to home, local schools stock Narcan out of abundance of caution. By Allegra Hobbs, Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County Region. The Alpine Independent School District had never stocked Narcan until roughly 1 month ago, when the Big Bend Regional Hospital District distributed a few doses of the life-saving overdose reversal medication to area schools. Now, the multi-campus district of fewer than 1,000 students has a total of 4 doses of the medication in nasal spray form, 2 at the middle school and 2 at the high school. So far, it's novelty to the staff, and a lack of protocol means it remains cloistered in the nurse's office, awaiting a formal training and policy change that will make it just another part of the administration's arsenal by the fall. I have it locked up, and nobody even really knows that we have it yet, said District Nurse Gayla Owen, also the nurse for Marathon ISD, which received 2 doses as well. I mentioned it to our superintendent and our principals, but we're getting in the process of having it available for this next school year. Educators simply aren't familiar with Narcan, the brand name of the medication Naloxone, explained Owen, who hopes to bring in someone with Border Patrol to conduct training for staff. And as every such change requires a codification in school policy, Owen is currently writing a policy to support Narcan administration. We will all be ready if needed, said Owen, though she hopes that day never comes. To date, Alpine ISD has not had an overdose on its campuses, but Owen would rather be safe than sorry and is grateful to have even a limited supply of the medication classified aptly as an opioid antagonist. I'm glad that it's available, so if it were to happen, we would be ready for it, she said. You just never know anymore. Spurred by a worsening statewide opioid crisis and accompanying proliferation of illicit fentanyl, a synthetic opioid roughly 50 times more potent than heroin and 100 times stronger than morphine, per the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, board members of the Big Bend Regional Hospital District, which encompasses Presidio and Brewster counties, took it upon themselves to procure a supply of Narcan to ensure local schools were stocked. In case of emergency. In March, the district filled out a request form via morenarcanplease.com, an initiative to distribute state-funded naloxone by the UT Health San Antonio School of Nursing. They received a few doses, which they were then able to distribute to area schools in Alpine, Marathon, Marfa, and Presidio. There wasn't a lot, said Director J.D. Newsom, but it was some. Owen said she hopes to procure more of the nasal sprays in the future. The hospital district also distributed 32 doses to Sulross State University. Newsom said the initiative had turned out to be an opportunity for education and hoped it prompted school districts to think proactively about overdose prevention. For some administrators, it was a completely foreign topic. I'd like to think that our efforts spurred some thought, because some of the school districts we gave it to didn't really have any idea what it was, said Newsom. I'm hoping this spurred some of the school districts to think about what happens if we do have a fentanyl issue. Nationwide, overdose deaths have increased among teens and adolescents since the start of the pandemic. Median monthly overdose deaths among people ages 10 to 19 increased 109% from July through December 2019 to the same time period in 2021, per the CDC. 90% of those deaths involved opioids and 84% involved illicitly manufactured fentanyls. Deaths involving illicitly manufactured fentanyls in that age group increased by 182%. In Texas alone, more than 5,000 people died of drug overdoses between October 2021 and October 2022, per CDC data. From 2019 to 2021, overdose deaths involving fentanyl in the state rose 399%, from 333 deaths to 1,662. Many of those who die from fentanyl overdoses do not know they are consuming the drug. It is more often the case that a person will unknowingly consume an illicit substance or counterfeit pill laced with fentanyl. Law enforcement seizures of fentanyl-laced pills increased dramatically from 2018 to 2021. The DEA's One Pill Can Kill initiative stresses the increase in fatal doses of fentanyl in fentanyl-laced pills, according to a lab analysis. In Texas, Governor Greg Abbott in April launched a $10 million information campaign called One Pill Kills, geared towards raising awareness among Texans about the dangers of fentanyl, and announced a plan to distribute 20,000 doses of Narcan to county sheriff's offices across the state. When it comes to combating the crisis, Texas lawmakers have set their sights on schools in particular. There are currently 8 bills making their way through the state legislature aimed at facilitating the distribution and use of Narcan by school staff and educators. It remains unclear how immediate a danger fentanyl currently poses in the Tri-County region, but news of fentanyl seized at the border crossing into Presidio County has caused some alarm. In November of last year, U.S. Customs and Border Protection seized 32 pounds of methamphetamine and 2 pounds of fentanyl from a driver on the Presidio International Bridge, the first time fentanyl was seized by local authorities. In January, authorities seized 15.43 pounds of fentanyl, along with a shipment of meth. Overall, the amount of fentanyl seizures at ports of entry along the U.S.-Mexico border have roughly doubled over the last 2 fiscal years. Of course, that's only one method of entry. In February, a California man was arrested at the Sierra Blanca CBP checkpoint when a search revealed he was carrying 1.005 kilograms of fentanyl. It's enough to prompt a heightened vigilance among law enforcement and healthcare workers. Of course, it's in our communities, said Newsom. It's coming across the border. Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson said his officers are equipped with Narcan, but have never had to use it. Their only encounter with fentanyl so far was approximately 6 months ago, when an abandoned backpack stashed with bags of the drug was found outside Marathon. "Whoever was bringing it got scared, dumped it, and took off," said Dodson. Joel Nunez, who serves both as Presidio County Sheriff's Office Chief Deputy and the Chief of Presidio ISD's Department of Public Safety, has anticipated the drug's appearance in the county for some time. He first hosted a presentation on the dangers of fentanyl at the high school for concerned parents in October. When reached for comment on Narcan distribution in Presidio ISD, he clarified that the school had been stocked with the medication prior to the hospital district's donation, thanks to Emergence Health Network out of El Paso. "All school nursing staff, medics, and police officers are well stocked with Narcan in case of emergency," said Nunez. Sol Ross State University Health Services Coordinator Danielle Bell said that while the university police had been carrying Narcan for 2 years, the university was in the process of expanding its stockpile of the medication and training for staff. With the hospital district's recent donation of 32 nasal spray doses, the university will be training administrators to recognize signs of an overdose and to administer the medication. "The people who will be the most likely to be on the scene first in an emergency situation will carry at least one dose," said Bell. "Those include designated people in residential living, health services, and university police. Training for staffers is expected to wrap up this summer." As with Alpine ISD, Bell clarified that there had never been an overdose on Sol Ross campus, but she was grateful to have life-saving medication on hand just in case. "I would never want to have an overdose incident on campus, but I am sure glad that we are prepared with the medication and knowledge to help prevent a death," she said. This is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, May 11th, 2023, obituaries. Henry. Dora G. Henry was 101 years old and lived in Fort Davis, Texas. Dora Henry passed away on May 1st, 2023, at about 10:15 a.m. in New Braunfels, Texas Hospital. Dora G. Henry was born on January 5th, 1922, to parents Alfredo and Nora Granado in Fort Davis, Texas. Dora attended school in Fort Davis, Texas. She later married Alan Allworth Henry and was the mother of 7 children: Bob Henry, Nancy Henry, Earl Henry, Richard Henry, John Henry, Terry Henry, and Beverly Cooper. Dora is survived by her remaining children, Bob Henry, John Henry, Terry Henry, and Beverly Cooper, also by many grandchildren, great-grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and great-great-grandchildren. Dora was in the St. Joseph Choir, Divine Mercy Group, and was an active member of the Catholic Daughter of the Americas. Dora retired from the state park in Fort Davis, Texas. Dora was a very good servant of God and always helped to take care of her family and friends. Paul Bearers are Leroy Henry, Michael Henry, Sharon Pena, Gabriel Cisneros, Dorian Pantusa, and Ashlyn Pantusa. Funeral service will be held at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Fort Davis on Friday, May 19th, 2023. Viewing will begin at 8 a.m., and praying of the Most Holy Rosary will begin at 9:30 a.m., followed by Mass at 10 a.m. Online condolences may be left at www.alpinememorialfuneralhome.com. Services have been entrusted to Alpine Memorial Funeral Home in Alpine, Texas.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, May 11th, 2023. Mayoral runoff date to be determined, by Sean Yorks. When Fort Stockton voters chose to become a home rule charter city last November, they voted for more control of city government, including elections. And with the May 6th municipal election complete, city residents will get to see part of what they voted for in action. One of the new rules for the charter is that municipal election candidates must gain 50% of the vote to win. And in last Saturday's mayoral election, nobody did. Paul Casillas gained the most votes with 370, but with 231 votes cast in favor of James Warnock, neither candidate gained 50% of the 821 votes cast. As per city charter rules, the two will have a runoff election at a date yet to be determined. The city council will meet next week to canvass the election and set a date for the runoff election. Pam Palileo was third in the mayoral vote with 185 votes, and James Wilson received 35 votes. In the race for City Council Place 1, Jerome Chavez received 418 votes, Isaiah Rojas 329, and Mike Stallard 76. Ruben Falcon was unopposed in the Place 2 race and received 585 votes. Kay Griffith won the Fort Stockton Independent School District Ward 1 seat with 122 votes. Nathan Trapp received 56 and Daniel Rangel 45. Streamlined application process for cost share conservation programs now available. The Center for Land Stewardship and Stakeholder Engagement at Borderlands Research Institute at Sol Ross has streamlined its application process for cost share conservation programs. Cost share programs reimburse a percentage of the overall cost of qualified conservation practices to selected landowners. Interested landowners can now apply through one convenient portal that will remain open year round. Applicants will be considered for any other programs. We're pleased to make it easier for West Texas landowners to access funds that will help them implement conservation practices across the Trans-Pecos, said Billy Trunt, Associate Director. Thanks to our many partners, conservation-minded landowners are getting the financial help they need to improve wildlife habitat that benefits us all. One program currently available, the Greater Big Bend Conservation Partnership Program, will reimburse approximately 50% of project costs. The program is available to eligible landowners in Brewster, Jeff Davis, and Presidio counties. The effort is fueled by a $3.5 million commitment from the USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service Regional Conservation and Partnership Program, which will help fund innovative conservation approaches on private lands, including habitat restoration efforts, conservation easements, and ecosystem services compensation. Eligible habitat management activities include, but are not limited to, grassland restoration via brush management, riparian restoration, and construction of wildlife-friendly fencing. Greater Big Bend Conservation Partnership is managed by the Center for Land Stewardship and Stakeholder Engagement, which is responsible for implementing restoration and enhancement projects, as well as monitoring and evaluating projects. The center is working in partnership with Texas Agricultural Land Trust, who will provide the expertise for all conservation easement agreements, as well as evaluation of ecosystem services and assessing ecosystem services compensation options. Other cost-share programs include the Partners for Habitat program, a collaborative initiative with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. This program will provide $150,000 of financial assistance directly to private landowners across West Texas counties of Brewster, Terrace, Terrell, Pecos, Reeves, Culberson, Hudspeth, Jeff Davis, and Presidio. Projects that will be funded include habitat enhancement and restoration actions that may include, but are not limited to, the following practices: brush management, mechanical and chemical, invasive species removal treatment, establishment of native vegetation, pollinator plantings, streamside management, and erosion control practices. To learn more about cost share programs and to apply, visit the Borderlands Research Institute website at bri.soloross.edu/stewardship-services-landowner-resources-cost-share-programs. County Honors FSHS Dual Enrollment Graduate. When Midland College holds its commencement ceremonies on Friday, one of the graduates receiving her degree will not have even graduated from high school yet. For Stockton High School senior Ralia Jackson has been taking classes at Midland College in addition to her studies at Fort Stockton High and will graduate Friday with an Associate of Arts degree in General Studies, walking with the Fort Stockton High School class of 2023 a week later. Jackson is the daughter of Billy and Jerry Sue Jackson and plans to continue her studies at Soul Ross University in Alpine. Jackson was recognized by the Pecos County Commissioner's Court at its Monday meeting. Judge Joe Schuster read a lengthy proclamation honoring Jackson. The Fort Stockton Independent School District and Midland College's dual credit partnership agreement has effectively benefited the citizens of Pecos County, Schuster said in the proclamation, later adding that Jackson has earned 84 credit hours and would be the first high school student to graduate from Midland College with an associate degree in general studies. Ralia has always been a person with the drive to achieve lofty goals in whatever she chooses to lend her talents to. Jackson earned an administrative clerk's certificate as a high school junior after completing 16 college credit hours and maintained higher than a 3.64 grade point average in her college courses. She'll graduate with a 3.7 GPA. Schuster said that by exceeding the standards and with hard work and dedication in scholastics, she has paved the way for future students of Pecos County. Midland College President Steve Thomas spoke at the meeting, congratulating Jackson on her outstanding academic achievements. As you point out in the proclamation, she has set the standard now and provides a great role model for future students. Midland College began offering dual credit courses at the Butts School in Fort Stockton before moving to the newly constructed Williams Regional Technical Training Center on Interstate 10. Midland College has been a benefit to this community and to Pecos County, Schuster added. It's been a great asset for us and our kids, and it kind of gives our kids a leg up on the rest of the kids in the communities that don't have the ability to get dual credit while they're in high school. And Jackson is an example of somebody putting the effort forth and being very successful. Dear Editor, an old, non-historical, two-car garage located behind the Rollins Sibley House Museum is being proposed as a site for history lessons. The garage obscures the old Hovey School Museum and the newly opened Old Blacksmith Shop Museum from view in three directions. Visibility of our historic sites is important for tourism. In addition, the space for the garage takes up the space the garage takes up could be paved, connecting to an existing parking area, enabling visitors to quickly reach all three museums, which are open to the public 1 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Necessary updating to a defunct garage to be used as a schoolroom with utilities is a huge waste of money. Our town has a college, high school, and several other schools available for any sort of in-house training. Signed, Barbara Kipchen. Dear Editor, there are honest used car dealers. However, when buying a used car, if the salesman only emphasizes the positive points but omits the fact that the car has been submerged in water, you're dealing with a liar, a cheat, and a thief. This is called telling half the truth. I see a striking similarity between this crook and the average church pastor on Fort Stockton. Now there are good churches and pastors in West Texas, but not, I believe, in this town. Most of the pastors here preach only half the Bible. I call this the lovey-dovey message. God loves me, He loves you, He loves Baptists, truck trackers, traffickers, murderers, child molesters, etc. As an unbiblical saying goes, God loves the sinner, but hates the sin. This expression is not found in the Bible. Sinners and criminals hear this and reason, God loves me, so I'll continue in my sin and crime. 4,400 years ago, when God got ticked off and drowned every man, woman, boy, girl on earth in a universal flood, does that sound like God loves sinners who continue to sin? Some religious writers to the Pioneer have stated the religious scene in Fort Stockton is wonderful. It's hunky-dory. Not so. Beer peddlers receive another license here every 6 months. Drugs are rampant on every street. Jesus talked 3 times more about hellfire than heaven. He said that most people are hell-bent. Cowardly preachers who don't want to offend their donors with dollars, who preach this tepid, watered-down, soft-soap, milk-toast message of love, 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 while ignoring the justice of God, I believe are responsible for the moral slide in our country. You say, George, you are harsh, judgmental, and unloving. Well, I'll emphasize love when 98% of preachers start preaching all the Bible. Signed, George Pitts. Belding Farms moves to halt renewal of permit. Belding Farms, a 60-year-old pecan farm in Fort Stockton, has taken legal steps to halt renewal of a groundwater permit to export water out of Pecos County to protect its water rights and those of all others and to ensure sustainability of the aquifer. The permit is held by Fort Stockton Holdings, which is owned by the Williams family, and originally was issued by the Middle Pecos Groundwater Conservation District in 2017. The Texas Water Code requires that construction of the project begin within 3 years of issuance, which hasn't happened, thus invalidating renewal. If renewed, the groundwater would be exported from Pecos County to the cities of Midland, San Angelo, and Abilene. Our concern is that the district underestimates the impacts to the aquifer from pumping nearly 55% more water and the risks to sustainability of the Edwards Trinity aquifer for all users, said Ernie Cockrell, chairman of the Cockrell Investment Partners, which owns Belding Farms. We're not opposed to water exports as long as rules are in place to protect historic levels for the benefit of everyone relying on the aquifer. On March 31st, Cockrell Investment Partners filed a lawsuit and application for a temporary injunction in Pecos County District Court in a bid to stop the Middle Pecos GCD from renewing the export permit when it's considered this summer. A hearing on the injunction is likely to be scheduled soon. The best gauge of the aquifer's health is Comanche Springs. It's the canary in the coal mine, said Cockrell. The springs only flow for a few months a year because the aquifer is already stressed, and we certainly would not want the flows to stop. Belding Farms uses groundwater to irrigate its pecan orchard and has invested millions of dollars to increase the efficiency of its water usage. Sustainability of the aquifer is as critical for all other water users as it is for us, Cockrell said. The city's planning to import water from Pecos County need reliability and sustainability as much as we do. Fort Stockton Rotary holds scholarship luncheon. On May 4th, the Rotary Club of Fort Stockton played host to the annual Scholars Dollars Scholarship Luncheon. Students had the opportunity to share their experiences as college students at Midland College. The Rotary Club presented its $5,000 donation to kick off the annual Scholars Dollars Fund Drive. During the luncheon, Chevron also presented a $10,000 check to the WRTTC for the Scholars Dollars. The event also served to launch the Abel Hanger Foundation Matching Grant Challenge, where they pledged to match any donations from Pecos County residents up to $15,000. Panther Pictures owner and WRTTC alumni Tristan Berrigan donated $500 to contribute to the scholarship program and urged others to give back. The total amount eligible for the matching grant as of May 8th is $6,600. The Abel Hanger Matching Grant Challenge will go through August 31st. Donations can be taken or mailed to the WRTTC, 1309 West IH-10, Fort Stockton, or online at midland.edu/gift. The Scholars Dollar Scholarship Program provides tuition assistance to all Pecos County residents attending the Midland College in Fort Stockton.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, May 4th. Only 2.7% vote early in city election. Early voting for City of Monahans special election is underway with continued slow activity. As of Tuesday at 6 p.m., only 113 votes had been cast. Early voting will continue throughout Friday, and the election will be on Saturday, May 6th. Early ballots can still be placed at City Hall, located at 112 West 2nd Street, and voting hours are from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m. through Friday. Voting hours on Election Day are 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., also in the council chambers at City Hall. The special election will ask voters to answer for or against the question to legalize the legal sale of all alcoholic beverages, including mixed beverages, and to answer for or against 7 amendments to the city charter. City Manager Rex Thee explained, "The city has been working on updating older language in the city charter, which is now outdated and no longer applies." Sample ballots may be obtained for review at the city secretary's office. Councilman dies at 93. Councilman Rudy Hernandez was appointed to the District 1 seat on September 11, 2012, where he served the last 11 years. The council appointed Hernandez to the post after the passing of longtime councilwoman Mary Garcia. The council would now be tasked with deciding to appoint someone to fill Hernandez's unexpired term, which ends May of 2024. Rodolfo Martinez Rudy Hernandez passed away on Friday, April 28th in Monahans at the age of 93. He was born to Ramona and Miguel Hernandez in Del Rio, Valverde County, on Sunday, February 12, 1930. He lived in Del Rio until he was 8 years old. His family relocated to Sanderson with the Southern Pacific Railroad. As a child, he often rode the train solo back and forth between Marfa and Sanderson to visit his grandmother there. When Rudy was 17 years old, he came to Monahans to work for the Texas Highway Department. He met and later married Ruth Samaniego Marquez in 1950. They were married almost 58 years until her untimely death in 2008. Rudy was drafted by the Oklahoma National Guard and served in the U.S. Army as a rifleman during the Korean conflict. He was involved in heavy combat against the Red Chinese and endured grueling and punishing conditions there. He returned to Monahans to build a good life for his wife and son. He and she never moved away. In a time long gone by, he was a dependable and reliable troubleshooter and serviceman for Texas Electric, now TXU. He served his community well, be it in service to his fellow comrades in arms with the VFW, in his work at St. John's Catholic Church, serving as a Monahans City Councilman, or fishing with his buddies. Rudy is preceded in death by his parents, his beloved wife Ruth, his brothers Enrique Hernandez and Israel Hernandez, his friend and companion Gloria Carrasco. He is survived by his brother Ruben M. and sister-in-law, Margarita Hernandez of Odessa. Also surviving Rudy is his son, Richard Lee, and daughter-in-law, Elizabeth Hatchett Hernandez, 3 grandchildren, 7 great-grandchildren. Mass will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, May 5th, at St. John the Apostle and Evangelist Catholic Church, with burials to follow at Monahans Memorial Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to Harkey Funeral Home, If you would like to send your condolences to the family, you may do so by signing his guestbook at www.harkeyfunerals.com. Monahan's icon, Lola McLean, passes away. Surrounded by family and resting peacefully, Lola McLean passed from this world shortly after midnight on May 1st, following a sudden illness. Lola was born in Monahan's on August 12, 1942, to Robert Harold and Lola Claire Butler of Grand Falls. Lola graduated from Monahan's High School in 1960, and she attended college at the University of Texas at Austin, where she studied music and jazz composition. After her freshman year at UT, Lola returned to Monahan's for the summer, where she reconnected with an older MHS classmate, Tommy McLean, who would later become the love of Lola's life. Lola and Tommy returned to Monahan's, where they married in 1962 at the First Baptist Church. Lola would go on to complete her undergraduate degree in music and education at Sul Ross State University in Alpine, and she would later receive a graduate degree in education after attending classes at both Texas Tech University in Lubbock and the University of Texas Permian Basin in Odessa. But Monahan's was always Lola's and Tommy's home, and over the ensuing 56 years, Lola would establish herself as a devoted and much-beloved pillar of the Monahan's and greater Ward County communities, including being named the Monahan's Chamber of Commerce's Outstanding Citizen of the Year in 2006, along with her lifelong friend and fellow musical maestro, Sue Branham. She played the organ for over five decades of regular services and special productions at First Baptist Church in Monahan's. She also played music for weddings, funerals, and other special occasions. She also loved heading up the musical side of many community theatrical productions. She accompanied scores of young local musicians in their solo and ensemble competitions at school, and she even served for several years as the principal of the Milam Fine Arts Magnet Academy in Odessa. But in the summer of 2016, Lola and Tommy decided to move to League City, where Lola would once again become a devoted and much-beloved pillar of a new community, this time in Galveston County. Lola played the keyboard for Galveston County Church's morning worship service on Sunday, April 30th, just mere hours before her passing. Lola is survived by her husband, Tommy, two children, William Thomas McLean and his wife, Tirza, of Galveston, and Lola Deanne Hervada and her husband, Juan, of League City, five grandchildren, and six great-grandchildren. Viewing will be at Harkey Funeral Home, located at 210 South Allen in Monahan's, on Tuesday, May 9th, with a family visitation at 5 p.m. A private interment will occur at the Monahan's Memorial Cemetery on Wednesday, May 10th, followed by a celebration of life ceremony honoring Lola at First Baptist Church at 11 a.m., officiated by Pastor Chris Powell. Fidana, convicted of injury to elderly. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Ward County jury on March 21st convicted a 44-year-old Monahan's man of assaulting an elderly man and pushing him out of a parked car in December 2021. Raymond Fidana rejected a plea agreement offered by District Attorney Randall Reynolds. Therefore, a jury trial was called. Testimony was provided over a two-day period, and after the jury retired to consider the verdict, they returned with a guilty verdict. According to the indictment handed down on February 9, 2022, on December 11, 2021, Fidana did intentionally cause injury to Chester Hollis by punching the back of his head, kicking him in the back, and pushing him out of a parked car, which caused him to hit his head. On May 5th, 143rd Judicial District Judge Mike Swanson handed down a sentence of 15 months confinement in the State Jail Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice and a $500 fine. Fedana was given credit for 273 days time served and assessed $460 court costs. Rosales arrested in trafficking operation. April 26th through April 29th, the Texas Department of Public Safety, DPS, Criminal Investigations Division, conducted an online solicitation of a minor operation. The goal was to target individuals seeking to exploit and victimize trafficking victims, as well as to identify and apprehend individuals suspected to be involved in human trafficking by using various websites to solicit sexual acts from minors. Multiple agencies assisted in these investigations, including DPS's CID, DPS Intelligence and Counterterrorism, Texas Highway Patrol, Odessa Police Department, and the Midland County Sheriff's Office. As a result of this operation, three suspects were arrested and booked into the Ector County Jail. All three suspects are now facing second-degree felony charges. Luis Rosales, age 53, of Monahans, charged with online solicitation of a minor, a second-degree felony. Joel Elizondo, age 33, of Kingsville, online solicitation of a minor, a second-degree felony. Nathan Dubose, age 27, of Big Spring, online solicitation of a minor, a second-degree felony. These investigations highlight the partnership between local and state law enforcement partners working together to combat human trafficking. If you are a victim of human trafficking or have information about this type of criminal activity, please contact the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-373-7888.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.